The first method to solve the back and forth equation with a computer will be with finite differences. Finite differences are very easy to formulate. It's very easy to write a piece of code which will give you a result of the black and scholes equation. The drawback, the main drawback, will be that it is relatively delicate to run in a proper manner, and you will see that you will have instabilities which appear if you don't know exactly what you're doing. So how does a finite differencing scheme look like for the black and scholes equation? First, you have to discretize the value of the option as a function of the underlying. So you generate a mesh where the underlying share acquires discrete values, and this mesh has to be homogeneously distributed. Having now an ensemble of values of the option terminal payoff as a function of the discrete values of the share, the idea is to approximate the derivatives in the black and scholes equation by finite differences. So instead of derivatives, we'll now approximate these with finite differences. And it is, in fact, quite easy to propose approximations for finite differences directly from the definition of the derivative. You can have, for example, a forward difference, a backward difference, or even a centered difference, which gives a little bit higher precision. In the same way, if you combine Taylor series expansions, you can actually propose approximations for the second derivative of an option in terms of discrete values. Substituting now these finite differences into the black and scholes equation, where you replace the derivatives, you can take a backward difference in time and a centered difference for the asset prices, and this will give you a finite difference scheme, which is rather naive, but still will provide a new set of values at a time before the expiry date as a function of perfectly known values starting from the terminal, the expiry date, the terminal payoff condition. So you can now take steps backward in time and evolve your solution from the expiry date backward to any time you would like to calculate now the value of the option before the expiry. All you need to do is to specify what happens with the values on the very left and the very right of the boundary, or more generally, on the boundary domain. These boundary conditions have to be taken from financial conditions, and for example, in the case of the put option, we saw that if the underlying share is presently valued at zero, the company went bankrupt, and you're certain to exercise the put option. And therefore, you can now discount back in time the value of the strike price, which is the value of the put option at the expiry date, and discount it back in time to any time you want. In the same way, you know that if the underlying asset becomes infinitely expensive, then the put option will have a zero value, and therefore you may simply impose a zero value on the very right of your simulation domain in the case of a put option. In fact, you can also calculate similar boundary conditions in the case of a call, and I will let you do that in an exercise. Having done so, you're ready to implement your finite difference scheme directly into the applet. And this has been done for you in the code called FD Solution.java, which you can click now to see exactly how things have been implemented. In particular, you will see how the asset parameters are taken and are redefined so as to make the scheme look shorter. If you now look at the scheme, it consists essentially in a single loop where the new value of the option, FP, with an index J, which is the index labeling the underlying share value. So the value of the option as a function of the underlying is given as a function of the values of the option we know from a previous time. So you should be able to identify each of the terms in your loop with the equation written in the syllabus. At the end of the scheme, you have to impose the boundary conditions, and you have now to be distinguishing the call option from the put option, and perhaps in the general case, even you can write a Neumann condition so as to avoid imposing anything at the very end, which is specific to the value of the option. You're ready now to test this scheme directly in the JBone, the VMarket applet, and you can press start to begin the simulation. You will see that the evolution will be extremely slow, and this is because the time step used in this applet is extremely small. You may want to try to increase it, and you will observe how a numerical instability develops. And this is the main drawback of this naive finite differencing scheme, is that you will have to keep the time step extremely small. However, a nice advantage is that you can change now from the put option to call option, or more complicated exotic options like vertical spread and supershare, and you will be able to describe the value of such an option prior to the expiry using exactly the same algorithm. This is extremely tempting, and considering the small effort that was needed compared to the analytical method, it is extremely tempting to keep this naive finite differencing to calculate the price of options. There is, however, two drawbacks which force you to reconsider these advantages. First, the precision on the left of your simulation domain, where the underlying share goes to zero, becomes extremely bad. In fact, the numerical accuracy decreases towards the left of the simulation domain. And therefore, you will have to take a sufficiently fine grid to represent your solution and be accurate enough. Unfortunately, taking a finer grid forces you to take even smaller time steps. And you are already now limited, and if you exceed a certain value for the time step, you develop a numerical instability which has absolutely no financial justification and is a pure numerical artifact. So you should never believe a solution which develops into oscillations like this. Remember that an option is always a right and not an obligation, and therefore can never have a negative value. And these oscillations usually develop into negative values. Is it possible to fix this defect of the naive finite differencing so as to prevent these instabilities and provide a scheme which evolves more rapidly? In fact, there is a way, an improved finite differencing scheme, which uses the log normal variables instead of the financial variables. So you use the same transformation as we introduced for the analytical solution and solve for the price of an option. You will solve now the normalized diffusion equation in log normal variables. This will allow you to take larger time steps, and you will have to satisfy the condition for the normalized diffusion equation instead of a very much more restrictive condition in the financial variables. However, to do so, you need first to transform the financial variables, the initial condition, you know, for the option, into normalized log normal variable. And this you can do if you know the initial condition explicitly, directly analytically, but if you don't, you will have to interpolate the values from neighboring grid points, since the finite differencing scheme will work only using a homogeneous grid. So if you have to use a homogeneous grid in log normal variables, you will have to interpolate these values at the beginning to generate your initial condition. Also at the end, when you want to look at what is finally the value in financial variables, you'll have to interpolate back from the log normal grid into the financial variables, and again this interpolation will be the source of imprecision. If you now look how the scheme in log normal variables has been implemented in fdsolution.java, you'll see that there is three parts. The first part deals only with the initial condition and should be executed only once at the beginning of your code. There you transform the value of the option in financial variables to the normalized variables. Then comes a very short section where you actually solve the normalized diffusion equation, which you should understand very easily since it is simpler than the scheme we had previously. Having a solution of the normalized diffusion equation will not be sufficient yet. You have now to transform this solution back into financial variables, and that's the third part of this scheme, which also should be executed only when you need actually a diagnostic of your solution, that means the actual value of the option at the end of your simulation. I'll let you play now a little bit with the time step and compare the very much larger time step you can use with the naive implementation we had previously. Before you do so, however, try to take only a single step, and you will see that after one step, the diffusion acted essentially for the option at the value, but will also, after one step, create oscillations for very low values of the underlying. This is the artifact from the interpolation. Remember, we had to interpolate from financial variables to log normal variables and back. Because of this interpolation, you now added numerical errors which appear as oscillations on the very left of your domain. In fact, you could reduce these numerical imprecisions by taking a finer grid, adding more mesh points into your simulation. If you do so, however, you'll have to reduce the time step again in order to prevent the development of a numerical instability. And if you have again to reduce the time step, you are in fact exactly there where we begun. You have to wait for too long until you get a solution. You will in fact have cured only the problem of the imprecision at the expense of quite a lot of coding. So much for the finite differencing, which is very often used to calculate the price of options because it is relatively fast, and perhaps because people don't know about finite elements, which in my opinion are very much better suited and much more robust to obtain such a solution. And we'll look at these in the next chapter.